T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves are tied up in the piece with the Charlotte Checkers in the Calder Cup Finals. Wolves are home tomorrow, Thursday, Saturday at Allstate Arena for games 3, 4, and 5. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of that in NBC Sports joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Or will join us momentarily. Will join us as we work out a technical situation that shall be handled forthwith.
We also will bring you a little conversation Matt Nagy had with Mully and Haw in a few minutes. It was really good stuff from the head coach of the Chicago Bears, and you will hear that in just a bit as well. I'm most concerned as we kind of get into this whole football thing. I had read about the 18-game regular season schedule, you know, this idea that Goodell has pitched to everyone, again, shortening the preseason.
That was going to be my first question. Schedule.
It has to be. Yep. That's the biggest issue afoot, in the NFL at this point. And I just can't help but feel it's happening again. We're just doing it again.
I think we are, but as Mike Florio joins us on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, is it finally happening as the league has danced around this idea of fewer preseason games and a couple more regular season games, Mike?
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. The NFL has yet to come out and say directly and strongly, we want 2 extra regular season games, but it's clear that that's what they want, and they think the way to get there is cut the preseason and grow the regular season. And one of the powers the NFL has under the current CBA, and this doesn't get talked about very much, the NFL has the unilateral authority to cut the preseason in half if it wants to. And the thinking back in 2011 was that at some point during the term of this current CBA, the NFL would say, hey, NFLPA, we're going to cut the preseason in half. What are you going to do about it? With the assumption that the NFLPA would say, oh, no, what are we going to do to make up that revenue? We better accept 2 extra regular season games. And the NFL has yet to make that move because I think the NFL fears that the players will say, all right, fine, less money for us, less money for you too. Let's go with 2 preseason games and let's stick with 16 regular season games. So I think the NFL really wants it. It's not a coincidence that Roger Goodell's talking all of a sudden about cutting the preseason a week after it comes out that they want 18 regular season games. And I think this is far more than a negotiating ploy for the next CBA. I think this is real. The NFL wants it, and they're going to make a push for it. And they very well, at some point, may come out and say, hey, folks, we've made the game a hell of a lot safer over the last 10 years. Go back and watch clips of games from the 80s and 90s. The game's a lot safer. We can play 18 regular season games.
What does it mean to the players that you've got guys like Tony Dungy out there saying that an 18-game schedule would be bad?
Well, I mean, it all depends upon what the players actually want. Phil Simms said yesterday on Chris Simms' podcast that the players, if you put the numbers in front of them, they would say, let's do it. They want the money. They want to play football. And at that age, and this is what the NFL has going for it, if it ever does come to a vote, for all players. Because the NFLPA leadership, primarily older players that are far more sensitive to the overall wear and tear on their body, and they only have so much time left in the NFL, the younger guys feel like they can do anything. And the league primarily is composed of younger guys. There are financial reasons to go with younger guys because of the rookie wage scale. And if you put it out to a vote, there probably is a chance that at least half of the players would say, hell yeah, we'll do it, once they see how much money they would make in addition to what they're already earning. So I think that more players would want it than we think. But the question is, how far does it ever get with the NFL Players Association? Because they've been adamant that they don't want it.
Talking with Mike Florio on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score, as we do every Wednesday around this time. You know, NFL 100 is a big deal with the league celebrating a century of existence. This weekend, here just outside Chicago, the Bears are going to be having their own 100-year celebration, including bringing out people who rarely make public appearances. Even Virginia McCaskey is going to be in front of people at one of these breakout symposia. I remember when Matt Nagy took the job, Mike. He talked about walking through the facility and seeing the Bears logo and seeing the history and what that meant to him. And because we're close to this, I would love a national perspective, you know, from somebody who grew up. Pittsburgh was the closest big city to you, if I remember correctly. Is there still any kind of brand exceptionalism? Do the Bears matter in a way that we like to think they do, or in a way that they think they do? Are they still special because of their place in NFL history?
I think it depends upon how old you are. I think it depends upon when you grew up. It depends upon what football meant to you when you were at an age where the influences in your life were football. And I think for the younger generation, the Bears are no different than the Seahawks, who didn't even enter the NFL until 1976. And most fans don't even realize they've only been around for 40-plus years. And actually, to me, the Seahawks are still a new team 43 years later, mm-hmm. because I remember vividly when the Seahawks and the Buccaneers expanded into the NFL to take it from 26 to 28 teams. So I really do think it's in the eye of the beholder and the people who have an appreciation of history. It is a big deal. And I think that you will have people who grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s that understand what the Bears mean to the NFL. But, you know, the reality is the teams that have that national following, they are the teams that are consistently competing for championships, consistently on national television, consistently drawing that attention. And the Bears haven't been consistently good enough for the last 50 years to really move the needle that way. And I think that for half of the team's existence, they've just been regarded as a team that periodically gets it together, and the 85 Bears, one of the best teams of all time, but far more often than not really a contending team, not really a competitive team. And I think for a lot of younger fans, that means a heck of a lot more than the fact that the Bears have been around for over 100 years. I mean, look at this. Few people realize this, and it just dawned on me today when we were talking about Carson Palmer joining the Cardinals' Ring of Honor. They're the oldest team in the NFL. They've been around since 1898. They predate the NFL by more than 20 years. And who gives a crap about the Arizona Cardinals? Because they've only won two NFL championships out of all those years. They've been bad far more often than they're good, and they can make a greater claim to history of the NFL than any other franchise, but, you know, when you're just not relevant for an extended period of time, it's hard for people to appreciate the overall historical contribution.
Speaking of irrelevance for an extended period of time, the Browns have been making a little news the last few weeks. Freddie Kitchens is their new head coach. His team's been offseason darlings for all the right reasons. But is he wrestling with something right now? What with it's Odell Beckham Jr. not being at OTAs, voluntary practices, whether it's Duke Johnson saying, I want to trade, and then Kitchen says something like, I want to win the lottery. It feels like he's wrestling with something internally, or maybe it's I can't tell where he's trying to win.
Well, I think he's under a lot of pressure, right? And a year ago, Freddie Kitchens wouldn't have been on anyone's short list. He wouldn't have been on anyone's long list of potential NFL head coaches. Circumstances came together in a way that allowed him to emerge the offensive coordinator. Remember when Greg Williams became the interim head coach of the Browns after Hugh Jackson was fired and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, was sent out the door as well. They asked Greg Williams about Freddie Kitchens as the OC, and he said, I didn't hire him. So that wasn't the best endorsement for Kitchens, but it worked out well. He's connected to Baker Mayfield, and now we settle into this reality where the expectations are very high. And if they fail, it's not going to be Baker Mayfield's fault. It's not going to be Odell Beckham's fault. It's not going to be John Dorsey's fault. It's going to be Freddie Kitchens' fault. And I think he's grappling with that. There are a lot of inconsistent messages from the Browns. Yesterday, Freddie Kitchens says this to Gerald McCoy, who picked the Panthers over the Browns and the Ravens. We want guys who want to be here. Okay, fine. Then why are you squatting on Duke Johnson? And the more I hear Freddie Kitchens say, we want guys who want to be here, and Baker Mayfield saying, get on the train or get off, I just wonder, is there some subconscious message to Odell Beckham Jr. voicing displeasure that he wasn't there for most of the offseason program, and does he really want to be part of the Browns? So, you know, I think this is a team that understands the expectations are sky high. They haven't played a game yet that counts this year, and I think they're starting to feel the pressure a little preemptively, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. If the Titans surprise them week one, if the Jets surprise them week two, and I think there is a chance the Browns start off 0-2. The sky's going to be falling in a city where, you know, the sky has been falling and has fallen on them for 20 years, but now all of a sudden the fans get a taste of relevance, and I think it does create a ton of pressure.
Mike, on Sunday in Springfield, Illinois, the state legislature passed with ease a massive bill that will allow for sports gambling in the state of Illinois, meaning Soldier Field will essentially be a sports book, and among many, many others across the state. And they're going to have to work out exactly how, because of the Park District, et cetera, and what the NFL's relationship is, because the Bears don't own Soldier Field. But does the NFL have a standard policy or something ready to go as each state is falling into place here, coming online with legalized betting on NFL games?
I think the NFL has been woefully behind the curve on how they will, number one, take advantage financially of the expansion of gambling, and number two, protect the integrity of the sport. They've just kind of sat back and been spectators over the last 13 months as this dynamic has taken on a life of its own. And I don't know where the NFL is right now on these matters, but I tell you, they understand that over the long haul, they're going to make a ton of money. And if you're talking about an in-stadium sports book at Soldier Field, you are talking about buying a ticket to a game, which also is a seat at the table to bet on anything and everything as the game unfolds with no lag. You're there watching it with your cell phone device, making a bet. Is the next play going to be a pass or a run, or are they going to score a touchdown? Is the field goal going to be wide left, wide right, whatever? And they will have
off the upright.
They'll have that double doink. Yeah. You'll get the double doink option, plus $3,500 for the double doink. So, and here's the thing. There's so much money to be made by this. And earlier this week, we spent a lot of time talking about the future of the Bills in Buffalo and, you know, the reshuffling of teams from smaller markets to larger markets. I just can't help, you know, and especially this extra element that you throw on top of it. And I put this to you guys. You're going to know better than I am. Could Chicago support a second NFL team at some point, especially if you're talking about 20 days per year where you can come to an open-air casino and bet all day long on anything and everything that's happening on the field in front of you?
You know, I also thought, too, that when you're adding two more regular season games, because of what happened Sunday, because it's changed the prism through which we see all this, I'm thinking somebody also would have to know betting patterns. I don't even know if people bet on exhibition games or do prop bets in exhibition games, because there's so much more variance. You don't know if a team's even trying to win or trying to just see guys or what's going on. How much more money would be generated on the gambling side by making those games real instead of not real?
I think a lot more money if they're real. 32 fake games replaced by 32 real games. TV money will be astronomical. I think that they've decided long ago, even before gambling became legalized, that this is something that will be a tremendous cash cow for the NFL, and I don't think they're going to let go of it. They're as discreet as they ever are about anything, but anytime you hear the commissioner talk about the preseason not being the quality that the NFL wants, the message is we want more regular season games. And I don't know when it's going to happen, but I just feel like it's a matter of time before we get to 18.
Mike, let's play a quick game here. You tell me which one of these is more complete nonsense. Tom Brady on Instagram posting Jay-Z lyrics that read like an instant message away message from 2002. Treat my first like my last and my last like my first. Or his trying to take Tom Terrific from Tom Seaver.
Yeah, the Tom Terrific thing is really odd to me. And it's not like anyone has ever referred to him as Tom Terrific at any point in the last 20 years. Like, age 42 is not the age to come up with a new nickname.
Nope.
You either get your nickname right out of the gates or you don't. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And, you know, the reality is if he's going to sell stuff through his TB12 website, get people to buy Tom Brady gear, he can put anything on that he wants and people are going to buy it. I don't know that he needs to take Tom Seaver's nickname. Come up with something new. Hashtag Tommy. I've always liked that. That's the one Dan Patrick threw on him years ago. I mean, whatever it is, people are going to buy his stuff. And, you know, it's an odd look to me. For a guy who doesn't produce many odd looks.
It's more than odd, and actually, I don't know if this has been considered or discussed much. I find it unseemly that this is happening so soon after Seaver's family made the official announcement that he's going to be leaving public life due to being diagnosed with dementia. You know, it's almost like, oh, well, great, now we can sneak this out, because he's not going to know or care. I thought, come on, man. Like, really? You're gonna do this now right after it was a news story that he's suffering?
The whole thing is just bizarre. And you wonder, I don't know who's advising him. And at times I think he gets it, and then every once in a while something like this happens. It's like, does this guy really get it? I mean, is this a product of just having sycophants around you all the time and people coming up with ideas and you get an idea and you think it's a good idea and there's no one close to you to tell you no? I agree with you guys. It's just a bad look for a guy who, again, does not produce many bad looks other than when he was standing in his boxer shorts at the scouting combine 20 years ago.
Well, and a haircut or two picked out for him by his wife, but I'd do the same thing. I mean, if she wants a haircut, you put the haircut on. Mike, appreciate it as always.
See you guys.
Mike Florio, brought to you by Art of Pizza. The Art of Pizza is celebrating 30 years in Lakeview. That's where I first had it. The Art of Pizza, located at 3033 North Ashland. Stop in for up to 18 varieties of hot, fresh, stuffed, pan, and thin crust slices. Delivery begins at 11 a.m. every day. Call 773-327-5600 or visit artofpizzachicago.com. It'll be the Rockies and Cubs tonight, 7:05 on these airwaves. Herman Marquez and Yu Darvish. White Sox and Nationals day game. Dylan Covey taking on Anibal Sanchez. We're talking about the Cubs' outcome last night. Discussed not only what Carlos Gonzalez might mean to Joe Maddon, but how that affects Albert Almora, just how nice it is to have Pedro Strop back, and this understanding. What is it, 82% now? Off by one percentage. But we put the web poll question out there. Do you agree with my assertion that Pedro Strop, in this era of Cubs competitiveness, has been the most taken for granted Cub? This is a guy who in 7 years has been absolutely brilliant. So we talked about that. Matt Nagy was on these airwaves this morning, and you are going to want to hear it. The Bears head coach had a lot of thoughts on what's going on with his team and a whole lot of new toys as they prepare to make a run at a Super Bowl. We can say those words. We're not afraid.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. That's what you got to do. You will hear from Matt Nagy next on The Score. This segment of Sports Radio 670 is brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV for their 58th anniversary sale. Now through the end of June, find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. Why are you laughing?
Our guy.
Oh, like Rick Campland?
Like Rick Camp. I'm just thinking of what if Rick Camp had himself an entire lot.
Trying to get you into a motorhome.
It's a gorgeous vehicle.
You can watch the NBA on the TV.
Take it anywhere.
Earlier this morning, Bears head coach Matt Nagy joined the Mully and Haw show, and they began by discussing the progress that is being made by one Mitchell Trubisky.
It's interesting. He's at a point right now, going into the second year with this offense, that we're definitely going to give him some more freedom. He had freedom last year in this offense, but the difference is that when you're just trying to learn what we're doing, a lot of the part of the process is just getting into the right formations and trying to get the play off and then make a play. He's now at a point where he's really able to really focus on the second level of this process, which is learning what the defense does. And so now we're just seeing here in OTAs, Coach Pagano is throwing a lot of good stuff at us right now, and it's given him an opportunity, whether it's with protections or whether it's a sight adjustment with the coverages, to not only just make the throw, but make the throw by making the right decision. And so far, we're really excited about his progress and really looking forward to doing it, you know, full speed ahead in training camp.
At OTAs, Matt, you get a first look at David Montgomery, the rookie third rounder from Iowa State. Also, Mike Davis comes in. Both running backs kind of new to the offense. What has stood out about each guy, and how nice of a problem is it to kind of think about how you're going to divide carries and playing time?
Yeah, it's a great problem. And for us, those guys, see, right now with the rules, we're not able to do a whole lot in the run game. I mean, you can call run plays and you can do different things, but these guys don't have pads on. There's contact rules of what you can and can't do. I mean, the other day it was funny, David Montgomery looked over at me and you know, he's a quiet kid but so hungry, and he just kind of looked at me, and he doesn't say much, but he looked at me and he said, "Hey coach," he goes, "when are we going to do some real football?" He's ready to get the pads on and he's ready to run that ball you know, in training camp, get hit a little bit and show what he can do. So we're really excited. Mike Davis has been awesome coming in here, just picking up the offense and just showing what he can do, and then obviously with Tariq, those three guys are just really, really, we feel like we're in a really good spot right now, and I'm so excited to get them going during the season.
You look at how the division will respond to you, how the league will respond to you. It's an interesting season. You had a chance to come in and establish your offense and do a lot of fun things and stuff we haven't seen around here. And now everybody goes to work on you, and you got to go to work anticipating what they're going to do to try to attack you. How much different will things be, and how much of that work have you put in?
Well, you're right. I mean, we talk about, you know, we want to have them all. We want to have the cat chasing, always chasing his own tail, and we feel like we want the defense to be trying to figure out what we're doing and always trying to stay one step ahead. And so now we have a library full of plays from last year that teams are going to look at tendencies and see what we do. And now we just need to figure out, okay, now that we have that, what do we do well? We weren't good enough last year on offense. We know that, and we understood going into last year that there's going to be a growing process for us, and there's going to be some highs and lows, and we're going to have a game like Tampa Bay where it's really clicking and we put up a lot of points and everything's, you know, going well for us. And then you're going to have other games where, you know, things just don't click and teams are going to do different things to you to try to adjust. And me too, as a play caller, you know, learning who these players are, what their strengths and weaknesses are. Now I have a much better feel timing for these players. And Allen Robinson's now a part of this deal in the offseason here where he wasn't last year. So every throw that Mitchell gets with Allen is just going to make us better and better. So we're going to do what we do well. We're going to keep those in, you know, obviously I can't say exactly what that is. I'd be giving our secrets away, but we're still going to have fun. We're going to keep growing, and we're going to work into what Mitch does well.
Matt, we're talking to you because this weekend is the Bears 100 celebration. And there's going to be 100 alumni, former players going to be there. You're going to be there. Yesterday, I believe it was, we saw a video. Dick Butkus surprised you and gave Khalil Mack the Pro Dick Butkus Award, which I think was a pretty cool thing to see. What will you remember about that experience, and how surprised was Khalil?
Well, he was surprised. And what a cool moment for our players. These guys are these players on this team, you know, there's a bunch of young kids on this team. And so what we did yesterday in the meeting, in the morning before that all that happened, was I showed him a video of who he was as a player, and there's some really neat clips on there, and just talking about who you know, Dick Butkus was, and then for these guys to listen to him talk yesterday, you guys should have seen it. He was talking to our whole entire team, coaches and players. Everyone took a knee, and I just stood back and just looked at our guys, and everyone was so honed in and focused at what the words were that he had to say. And it's just a powerful moment. It's a day I'll never forget myself. Got some good pictures with him, and it just goes to show the rich tradition and history that this organization has. And when you have it come from one of the greatest linebackers, if not the greatest linebacker to ever play the game, the way he played it, our guys need to feel that, and that's what we're striving for. So it was a really cool moment.
Sure, as a former quarterback, you were also afraid a little bit to see Dick.
You better believe it. Huh? You don't want to be seeing too many of those guys.
So listen, one of the real interesting things you've done in the offseason is bringing Cordero Patterson. I love that guy, and I don't know what you call his position. I've been trying to settle on weapon, but do you have an official designation for exactly how you're going to use him? Because it's a world of possibility.
Yeah, you know what we do. We have a position. You know, we use different names for our personnel groupings, and you know, whether it's, you know, in the football, a lot of people use numbers and digits, whether it's 11 or 12, et cetera. We'll use zebra and tiger, and you know, for him, we use Trojan, and so that he's our Trojan. And I probably just gave a little bit of information away, but I'm okay with it because we can always switch it if we need to. But he's known as the Trojan, and goes back to his high school days of that, so it clicks with him. But he, you know what, we're so excited to get CP in here, and he, I mean, this kid is 6'3", 225 pounds, and can fly. So we're just fire. I'm like a kid in a candy store. I just want to be able to just take, you know, I got to be careful though. I can't peek too soon. I just got to pull back and make sure we use them, you know, as we can. But he's been unbelievable picking up this offense. And I think you guys are going to be really excited when we get to the season to see what he can do, let alone, that's not even talking about special teams. I mean, right. This guy's the best kick returner in the NFL.
So will he be on the field for Ask Kickin' Chicken? when you call that play. How many defensive players are in the huddle for that one?
I love you guys, and you guys are, we're all in together. But let me tell you something. There is nobody that's going to find out what that play is.
The Eagles are listening. Matt, we'll let you go just on the way out. I promised I would never ask a kicker question of you, so I won't. But the change in defensive coordinator with Chuck Pagano coming in, will he operate the same way that Vic did, or will you be more involved on that side of the ball?
No, it'll be just like Vic. You know, that Coach Pagano has done such an amazing job in his career. This guy, he knows football inside out. He knows defense inside out. He knows players, how to handle players. He's an unbelievable leader. He knew that when we went through the interview process. That's his show over there. So I'm going to always be a part of it, just like I was last year with Vic. But when it comes down to it, I want him to be himself and him to let his personality show with his defensive calls. And so far, I'm just absolutely loving it.
Defense? Anything about me to be involved in defense? Come
Pass.
On. Who are you talking to? You know who you're talking to here? Come on.
Don't need any of that. I'm good.
I'm not interested.
That's why we hired Chuck.
That was Matt Nagy. And the bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves are tied at one game apiece with the Charlotte Checkers in the Calder Cup Finals. The Wolves are home tomorrow, Thursday, and Saturday at Allstate Arena for games 3, 4, and 5. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. There's just such an upbeat energy about that guy. And so you know the story on Ass Kicking Chicken. When he was addressing the University of Delaware as the commencement speaker, he made reference to that. He sort of went off script, and he said he's going to develop a play. I guess that's a phrase used because they're the Blue Hens.
Yes.
They're the Delaware Blue Hens, correct. And I don't know if they've got hats or shirts that say Ass Kicking Chicken on there. So I think he was kind of playing to the home crowd to get a little bit of easy applause.
Seemed to really
Ass Kicking Chicken.
He seemed to really enjoy himself in that commencement speech. I've watched some, not all of it, and he was really feeling it.
Who was your commencement speaker?
I don't remember. He was an actor of some repute in the 70s, a graduate of Wisconsin-Madison, and he brought, I kid you not, the only thing I remember about the actual graduation ceremony, because I almost didn't make it there for two very specific reasons, was that he broke into song and began singing Age of Aquarius, for no real reason that I could get, and that's all I remember from my commencement speech. That's it.
And you don't remember who you nope. literally don't remember who nope. your commit. Okay, here we nope. go. We're gonna have to solve the text. We're gonna have to solve this one.
I need the 2000 graduating class of 2000. What was that? 7 spring class from University of Wisconsin Madison. If you were in that class. And more sober, than I was, then you might remember who our commencement speaker was. And if you do, please text.
Yeah, mine was really memorable, actually. It was
good for you.
Even though everybody was horribly hungover. And,
just awful.
It was George Will. And
Was he telling everybody it was better back in the day?
Well, he was excoriating the Duke English department.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Here I was graduating with my English degree, and he spent most of his speech pillorying the Duke English department for straying from the canon of old white men because they dared to introduce and prioritize writers of different races, creeds, colors, genders,
you know what?
Backgrounds, etc.
If you'd have just said it was George Will and then given me 3 guesses, mm-hmm. I probably could have gotten the thrust of his commencement
speech. I will
say this. I probably could have guessed.
It was not a bad speech.
Uh-huh.
It was just kind of a mean one. And he said,
That's like Jordan in his Hall of Fame speech, just like taking shots at people that didn't think he could get there.
And I talked to him about it since. He and I had a conversation about it regarding like, wow, sort of how that felt to me on the receiving end of it. Like, man, thanks. Glad we had you here.
Oh, there's a list. There's a list of commencement speakers from Wisconsin.
I found yours.
Wait, hold on. Actor
for the last
70s actor.
Noticeably, I should let you know, I have no idea if this guy was big or not. I don't remember his name at the time even. You go through the last 10 commencement speakers at the University of Wisconsin. Russell Wilson in 16, Katie Couric 15, John Huntsman, Anders Holm, who was there. He's part of the Workaholics crew.
Okay.
He's a tall, white, goofy-looking guy. And you go through all these people, and they all have Bud Selig in 09. Well, you go through all of these. Tammy Baldwin in 05. Most of them have a little blurb. This person does not. It just says name and occupation.
Who is it?
Andre DeShields, class of 1970, actor.
Well, isn't he like Delino's uncle or something?
And isn't the daughter in the WNBA? Isn't she a DeShields?
Chicago Sky.
Yeah.
But I don't Diamond. Think that's of... Are they those DeShields?
I've never heard of him.
Neither
I've
have I.
Probably not. I made it up.
And again, I was not of sound mind or body and barely got across
And the reason
stage.
He was singing Age of Aquarius uh-huh. is he began his pro career in the 1969 Chicago production of Hair.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense now.
If that's how
I had
got
a great voice.
Started.
I was clapping along. I love that song.
Yeah, I don't know who he is.
He's great like guy.
He's a that never guy met. Actor.
No, he's not. He's not familiar enough to me.
I guess he was Larry on Cosby. Who could forget that role?
Oh, of course.
I had Bill Curtis. Bill Curtis was mine.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was very long.
Really?
Yes.
And the speech?
Very brief, actually.
We have the Midday Midway coming up, and it's appropriate, as we mentioned, the summer of 1969, because an infamous person from that very summer is in the news once again and will be the subject of a story that I'm addressing. Also, I want you to wonder where would people be vaping booze?
We just talked about the University of Madison,
where,
so it can't
where
be there.
Are people vaping alcohol?
You mean a place in the country, right? Not like on your body?
Yes. I mean,
just
an
wondering.
Come on,
there's
man.
Other ways to do
no,
that.
A geographical place where what would be the likely place
okay.
in the United States where people are
I don't
vaping?
Think you can inhale
booze.
That way, so that makes sense. I have a story for a sad story for those of us who like to eat out and eat cheaply. I also have one of the greatest, strangest sports I just found out about an hour ago.
Cool.
The Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670, the score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
it. The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Midday Midway brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR. We talked to Mike Florio. We heard again from Matt Nagy. I have deemed Pedro Strop the most taken for granted Cub of this era, and 82% of you agree with me, according to my web poll, so that makes me feel fulfilled and validated.
You still have time to take a shot at Dan's fulfillment and validation. You can vote. Go vote no, just for the hell of it now.
Ruin
if you
my
like
day
it.
If you
now
want.
Now that he's taking a friggin' victory lap at 10:45 in the morning, go vote. It's Bernstein underscore MCK.
Also pointed out the fact that Joe Madden really is not interested in how Albert Elmora feels about anything or how people feel about Elmora feeling
not
about
so
anything.
Much. Thank you.
Because,
no, I'd like the wins.
He likes Carlos Gonzalez, even though he hasn't really proven he's any good yet. He's got a track record, and he's Quenvilleing this.
Yeah, I don't hate him giving him the opportunity to prove something. I hope it doesn't come at a cost of Albert Elmora setting himself right if he's got something in there that I haven't seen yet. So we begin with a story of a stupid criminal. Those are my favorite kind of stupid criminal stories. Social media users help cops bust alleged turtle killer. Devin Antoine Simpson was busted by cops in North Carolina for kicking to death a helpless pet turtle. Social media users saw the video of the attack online and helped diagnose where it happened, who was in the video, and how to find this guy through clues left on the thing. Now, social media users needed to help cops because the video came down rather quickly. But because the internet is what it is,
who took the video?
People were able to record it, take a look at it, and diagnose it. They found it happened in somewhere near Greenville, North Carolina. They could see a couple of things in the background and based off of where he went and all that kind of stuff. Now, it's a stupid criminal story, you may think, because the guy who did it, Devin Antoine Simpson, sorry, the alleged guy who did it, he posted the video himself of doing this and then put more digital tracks down by trying to go on to Facebook and delete the post himself. which, as I understand it in the news story, makes even more prints about where you are and where you were when you tried to delete the video.
Why did he kick a turtle?
I don't know. It's a sad, sad story. I'm glad the guy has been caught and he will allegedly be brought to justice sooner rather than later. I just think it's nice that social media did a good thing for once.
Yeah, my very first pet when I was 4 years old.
You had a turtle?
Yeah, didn't. Yeah, Puddles died.
Yeah, well, everybody's first pet kind of day.
Puddles tried to escape, and he impaled himself. And it was
how does it, hold on? How does a turtle?
I don't know.
Travel at a speed that would result in impalement.
I don't remember all that well because I was four. But if I remember, he was in
it's a turtle.
This little enclosure, and the enclosure had kind of an edge on it, and he climbed up and kind of caught himself on something and stayed caught there and died.
Where's Puddles? I don't know. Yeah, Puddles. He got like 4 or 5 steps away. It was so close.
I have vivid memories of burying Puddles. Probably a little too vivid for my own good. But
that doesn't scar people for life. You're fine.
Yeah, that was awful. There's the new Tarantino movie that is coming out, and it is...
what's the name of this one? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, yeah. Indeed. And it is, at least in part, the story of the Manson family murders in the summer of 1969. It was the summer that I was being born. It was the summer of the moon landings. There was a whole lot going on. And then you see something like this, and you're just reminded of the reality of it, because when you see the trailer for the movie and of somebody your age, it doesn't seem real. Like, it was just sort of a thing.
I don't know that era of history much at all. And I'm somewhat of a history buff, but that is a blind spot to me.
They make our current tumultuous times, they put it in perspective, both 68, you know, the horrible summer of 68 and 1969. But just earlier this week, California Governor Gavin Newsom overruled a parole board's decision to free Charles Manson follower Leslie Van Houten, marking the third time a governor has stopped the release of the youngest member of Manson's murderous cult.
Hmm.
Leslie Van Houten is 69 and is deemed to be still a threat, according to Newsom, though she spent nearly half a century behind bars and has received reports of good behavior and testimonials about her rehabilitation. And he wrote, "I commend Ms. Van Houten for her efforts at rehabilitation, acknowledge her youth at the time of the crimes. I'm concerned about her role in these killings and her potential for future violence. Ms. Van Houten was an eager participant in the killing of the LaBiancas and played a significant role. She was 19 when she and other cult members stabbed to death wealthy Los Angeles grocer Lino LaBianca and his wife Rosemary. In August, said they had carved up his body and smeared the couple's blood on the walls. And this was the day after other Manson followers, not including Van Houten, killed pregnant actress Sharon Tate and 4 others in violence that spread fear throughout Los Angeles and riveted the nation." Apparently, she has been a model prisoner. And she has been mentoring other prisoners about life in prison. She has described her troubled childhood that led her to drug use and hanging around with outcasts, and how she was taken under the spell of Manson. Manson and his followers were sentenced to death in 1971. Those punishments were commuted to life in prison after the California Supreme Court ruled capital punishment unconstitutional in 1972. And if you hear the name... Yes, it's always very interesting to note that the only time most people hear the name Van Houten is where?
Milhouse.
Correct.
Oh, gosh, that's right.
If you and there's an interesting, you know, Milhouse Van Houten of The Simpsons.
Uh-huh, everything's coming up Milhouse.
Correct. But, you know, even though it's spelled differently, he's named Milhouse. Why?
I don't know.
That's Richard Nixon's middle name.
That's right.
Richard Milhouse
Nixon. I
didn't know
it was the sad thing.
Do you know, and I'll leave you with this, do you know what Milhouse Van Houten's middle name is?
No, of course.
Hitler.
It's Mussolini.
Come on.
Yes. It is Mussolini.
This is bad news for many, though not for Dan Bernstein. I like many people, enjoy a trip to Chipotle every now and again.
Meanwhile, my kids are Chipotle addicts.
Dude,
now.
I'm telling you, they've
my wife and kids.
They
so they're people.
Overcame the whole listeria issue.
Their chips are great.
They
that
are
that little bit of
chips.
Lime zest or lemon or whatever,
man.
The acidity is in the chips.
Take those down. We're getting Chipotle.
I'll get Qdoba.
They are facing some issues, however, and it has to do with a tariff, I guess, that may be going on imported Mexican goods. Have you seen
what they had
to come clean
that
on?
That is going to be stopped.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear it. They said that the average cost to consumer that they would have to raise burrito prices by would be 5 cents a burrito. In turn, that's to try and cover the $15 million cost that these tariffs would put on a beloved brand like this. I know that you're not the biggest fan, but you have to admit, if you need a quick fix and just a run through the burrito bar or a burrito bowl or, like you say, those chips, which might have crack in them because they're so darn good, this is devastating news for those of us who need to eat fairly clean and eat fairly fast. I am very much hoping.
I think you're okay.
If these tariffs don't go through.
I think the markets reacted to it yesterday because legislators kind of stood up and say, no, my state doesn't want this.
Yeah, they were taking a big hit in the stock market earlier, but I'm glad to hear that a fan favorite has bounced back.
They're vaping booze in...
has to be Florida.
Wisconsin.
Oh!
The gang...
That's the other place.
At a bar in Milwaukee called the Word Bar.
What bar?
W-E-R-D.
Word, oh, yeah, I know the place.
Word Bar. Mm-hmm. It's called the Alcohol Mist Pro. And they're saying, come be the first to experience the newest way to take a shot. Alcohol Mist is a shot that is vaporized into a balloon for you to inhale. Each balloon is equivalent to 2.5 shots. Don't worry about the calories. You're not digesting the shot. You're inhaling it.
Yeah. Isn't that like asphyxiation?
No. You're just
that's
breathing
not like hypoxia?
What do you think it costs? What would you pay for 2.5 shots?
It's called a cup of Kino, and wait till you see what it costs. I'm going to go with $9.
Pretty good guess. Anybody else?
I mean, it's still Wisconsin, so liquor costs nothing there.
$8. And they say patrons will experience, quote, an instant buzz that some describe as uniquely distinct from your everyday drinking experience. That's the machine's manufacturer, Vape Shot Incorporated. It's considered a gimmick. The device costs $10,000. But it attaches micro droplets of liquid alcohol to the mist shots that go straight from a latex balloon and into your lungs. It's a calorie-free drinking experience. A single 750-milliliter bottle of spirits would produce 1,500 shots from the Mist Pro.
Huh. At $8 a pop.
At $8 a pop. So maybe expect to see more. I always wondered this, too. When I am cooking and I pour wine into a sauté pan.
Right.
And I know the alcohol cooks off.
Yes.
But I always wonder, because very often I've got my nose in the pan and I'm trying to get everything
go
just right.
Somewhere.
Right. So if I breathe that in, is that boiling, quote unquote, boiling off of the alcohol in the wine, is that ingestible when you pour it into the pan?
I would think that it is. I've actually inhaled alcohol in a mist like this before. When I was in college, I went down to we were covering a bowl game. The Badgers were playing in Orlando, and we went up through the Jack Daniel's distillery. And they will open the lid of a still, and you just kind of lean over and you take, I mean, instantly, as drunk as I've ever been, because just with that little sniff, and then 5 seconds later, it was gone. It was one of the most bizarre experiences. I didn't know it was coming.
I don't know that your blood alcohol could be. I'm sure that there was some a dizziness factor.
Yeah,
to it.
I don't know. It just felt as though I was just coming out of anesthesia or something like that. It was quite a hit. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We have been waiting for this one. NBA Finals been rocking. I had a couple of days off and really enjoyed watching the first two games, though I think the Raptors did not enjoy letting Game 2 get away from them. Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops Critic on Twitter, HoopsCritic.com and SiriusXM NBA is going to join us on the other side. We will talk a little NBA Finals with him. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.